Hello, my friends, and welcome to Stand to Reason. I am Greg Kokel, the host, and I have always been Greg Kokel, and I will continue to be Greg Kokel. I don't know why I'm saying this. I will endure as myself. There's some philosophical point working here underneath the surface. I'm trying to figure out what it is. But anyway, I am glad you're with me, excuse me, for this special hour. And I want to talk about a broad issue that I have referred to odds in ways over time here and there and made reference to, but I want to speak to some of this issue in a little more organized fashion today here on the show, that it has to do with the broad notion that all religions ultimately lead to God. And, of course, this is a very popular notion that is connected, joined at the hip, with a popular objection to Christianity, that Christians are arrogant, narrow-minded, even dangerous for thinking otherwise, that their view is the only true view taken as a whole. And, by the way, I always make that qualification, taken as a whole. A true view can overlap with other views which are not, when taken as a whole, true, but still share some common denominators that do reflect reality as it actually is. So it isn't that Christians are saying that there is nothing that is truthful in any other religion or philosophy, but rather taken as a whole picture of reality, as a world view, as a take on the way things actually are, they can't all be right. And I'll talk about that a little bit. They divert in significant ways. And so finding common denominators between all the religions is not the secret way of settling the issue about the variety or plurality of religious views, and how do we reconcile the notion of religious pluralism, that is, that there are many views that are available, and how do we figure out which is right or which aspects of any particular view is correct. Now, a while back, I was on an airplane flying from Los Angeles to San Francisco. That's a fairly short flight, about a half hour in the air, and I sat next to an interesting world traveler named Stuart. Now, Stuart had had a little bit to drink, and so he was quite talkative, which was fine. I was interested in talking with him. In fact, his last name suggested a famous author from the past. I don't want to reveal his whole identity, but I wondered if he was related to this other author of a whole, maybe two generations ago, when it says that he was. He said he was, interestingly. But it turned out he had some very strong opinions about religion. Don't ask me how we got into the discussion. I don't remember. Generally, in circumstances like this, when I'm on a plane, you make common cause with the person next to you. You say hi to them. And incidentally, it is a truism, and you know this if you fly a lot, that every person that sits down next to you on an airplane is weird until you say something to that person. You say, hi, how you doing? Where are you going? You headed home? You headed to work? You on vacation? In other words, you make small talk. And the minute you make small talk with somebody sitting next to you, they cease usually being the weird person and they become a genuine human being, which is one of the reasons that I make it a habit to at least greet whoever sits next to me on the plane, so we can break through that veneer of unfamiliarity to the core of at least familiar as human beings. And you never know where that's going to lead. Just being friendly, and many of you know that's a big part of the tactical game plan that we talk about here a lot. So I suspect that what happened is he asked me what I was going to do in the San Francisco Bay Area, and you know what I do, and I told him a little bit about that, and however it is I mentioned it, I approach it from different ways. But it was clear that now religion as a topic is in the air, and he is a world traveler, And I have run into people like this. And I'm thinking of another woman who was an older woman. And when I was talking with her a little bit about the claims of Jesus and the nature of Christianity and the issue of truth, she was actually somewhat patronizing is the way it seemed to me, but I didn't really take offense because her attitude was, Sonny, I've been around the world and visited a lot of different countries, and everybody doesn't believe the way you believe. Now, of course, I've been around the world and visited lots of countries, maybe more than her, but she had, but I didn't want to make this into a one-upsmanship. And notice, by the way, that the way she opened or made her point, the way she offered her point is that the reason that some people like me, apparently, believe that ours is the only way is because we just haven't gotten around. We haven't realized that there's a lot of people who have different points of view. Now, when you think about it for a moment, I'm not sure how she expects that to play in a thoughtful discussion about religion. Because even though there are lots of people who disagree on a whole host of topics, doesn't mean that one person is not within his or her rights to think that they're right. They're correct on their view. No, you couldn't be right. Why not? Well, there's lots of different views out there. Well, of course there's lots of different views, but why does that mean I couldn't be right? In any event, that's the way people take it. The reason that Christians are so narrow in their view is because they just haven't been exposed to the real world. And when they get exposed, they realize, oh, there are lots of other options out there. Well, that's a good thing to know, no question. But just knowing that there are lots of options doesn't tell you anything about which option, if any, is correct, or whether Christians believing that they're correct in spite of the other options is a sound belief. Just noting that there's a variety tells you nothing but that there's a variety. So something like this is going on with Stuart. And we are carrying on our conversations. And he talked about his survey of world religions. And in that world traveling survey of world religions, he had concluded that the common element, and therefore the core truth of all religions, was love and people getting along with each other. And so on his view, and this is another unusual thing, I think, though it is a common impulse by people who, can I say, reflect shallowly on this issue, that if we can, given all the variety of religious views, let's find the thing that's in common, and that must be the thing that's true, that's at the core of a religion. And the other things are just man-made deals that creep in there. But if we find the common elements, then we realize what religion is really about is these common elements. And if you pursue the common elements, you pretty much get what most religions are after, so you don't have to solve the problem or answer the question of what religion is actually true. Now, I want you to think for a moment, though, on the one hand, that there's a sensibility to that, but part of the problem is love, for example, and people getting along with each other is not a central feature of every religion. Animism isn't a religion that cares about love. It cares about pacifying spirits. Even if you look at the monistic religions of the East, like forms of Hinduism, in Hinduism only one thing is real, and that isn't love. The only thing that's real is this impersonal God who consumes. Well, not really consumes everything. He is everything, or it is everything, or God is everything. And Brahman is everything. And all the distinctives, like you and I, and good and evil, by the way, and getting along and not getting along, are all part of the illusion that is keeping us from the true God. Now, Buddhism does have a kind of ethical system here, but the ethical system is really meant to get you to nirvana. And it doesn't focus on love, necessarily, or everybody getting along. I think when I lived in Thailand, there were five tenets to the Buddhist views there. Don't drink whiskey. Don't fornicate or commit adultery. Don't murder. Don't steal. I can't remember the fifth one, but notice these are just things you're not supposed to do. Of course, if you do them, it builds up your karmic load. You've got to deal with that. But notice that these things are not principally concerned with other people and getting along with other people, though they help. These are principally concerned with doing the thing that reduces or doesn't increase your karmic load and therefore makes it easier for you to get into the next life and eventually escape the cycle of reincarnation. Okay? So these kinds of generalized opinions about what religion is really about are sometimes a result of a naive assessment of world religions. Sometimes it focuses in on the wrong thing. I had a young lady when I was at Cal State or the University of California, Irvine, and I spoke there many years ago. And after my talk, she came up to me, a student there, and she said, "Well, I think all religions are basically the same." So I turned around to the board that was behind me because I was in a lecture hall. I took a piece of chalk and I drew two circles and filled them in, small ones, kind of like the size of a pill. And I asked her, "Are these two circles now sitting next to each other basically the same?" And she said, "Yes." And then I drew a line from one, and I wrote the word aspirin, and I drew a line from the other, and I wrote the word arsenic, and then I asked the same question. Well, she obviously said they're not the same. But my point was that maybe it's not the similarities that are important, but the differences that are most important. Okay? So when you look at this broad area, people thinking all religions are basically true and basically the same, or at least at the core they're the same, this just isn't true. And if it were true, it's not even clear to me that this is the important factor, because maybe it's not the similarities that are important, but the differences that are important. Now, these are not neutral conversations, though, and because when people talk about these things, they get personally invested in a strong way. That is, there are answers to these questions about religion that are deeply troubling to people. And I can't say that Christians are immune from this, but I don't think the hostility is coming largely from Christians, though they can be hostile. I think the ideological hostility is coming from the skeptics or the challengers, as the people who push back on Christianity because they think that the idea that a person believes he's right in his religious convictions is itself not a virtue but a vice. And of course, many, many people have said this. Indeed, this is something that Stuart brought up in our conversation. He said, "You must be one of those people who believes that 90% of the people in the world are wrong about their religion." And then the word hate was mixed into that. I think the word bigotry fixed in there too, but you can see where he's going. If you're one of those people, then something's wrong with you morally. You're a hater or a bigot of some sort. Why? Simply because you think you're right about a religious view. And by the way, if you think you're right, then it just follows from that. There is an entailment relationship that those who disagree with you would be people you would have to consider to be wrong in order for your belief that your own view is true to make any sense. If your view is right, then people who disagree are wrong. Now, if your view is wrong, then people who disagree may be right, but they may still be wrong in their own views and what they disagree on. But I'll tell you one thing, they can't all be right. And this is one thing that I said to Stuart. I said, well, I guess I am one of those kind of people who think that 90% of the people in the world have wrong views about religion. But that's not because necessarily I think my view is right. That's because of the nature of the thing itself. And I'm going to get into some detail about this shortly. But what you're going to see is that there is an incoherence to the claim that all religions are equally true or equally legitimate paths to God. In fact, now that I think about it, the comment that Stuart made itself was, well, let's call it, had suicidal tendencies. Because, as he put it, he was very uncomfortable with people who thought that only their view was the right one. Okay, I get that. But what's the problem? The problem is that his, Stuart's, contrary view to mine may be more pluralistic, more open to other views, whatever it is. That view is a view. He actually believed his view was correct, too. So this is an insight I want you to get. And I want you to think about it every time you have conversations like this with other people. And I hope they're friendly conversations. They ought to be. Gentleness and reverence. That's how we comport ourselves. 1 Peter 3. Not quarrelsome, but patient when wronged. 2 Timothy 2. Lots of places in Scripture we see guidelines like this. But I want it to be clear that whenever a person weighs in with a point of view, they are declaring that their view, as far as they can tell, is correct. They may not know it's correct. That's another project. It requires more evidence. But at least for the moment, they believe it is. And if they believe it's correct, then they believe other people who disagree with them must be wrong. And there is no way to avoid this. Everybody in a conversation who plants their flag in any sense is making an implicit claim to truth, to knowing it, and an implicit claim to falsity that would be any other view that disagrees with theirs is false. You cannot avoid such a thing. Every person that complains about Christians' exclusivity in their view, and they complain that such a view, thinking you're the one who's right, is somehow arrogant or narrow-minded or intolerant or bigoted or hateful or evil in some fashion, is just as equally offering a point of view that is no less rigid than the Christians. It has different content. It covers different ground, but they are just as persuaded that they're right and the Christian's wrong. And if it's the persuasion that one is right that is the substance of the objection, then they are guilty of the same thing they're claiming you are guilty of. So anyway, we talked, Stuart and I talked, we talked the whole flight. And it's clear that he was some kind of a pluralist, and Stuart is not alone. He was obviously an intelligent man, but he was making a very foolish mistake in thinking, as many intelligent people do, when it comes to spiritual matters. He was simply not aware of the fact that his view, as expressed, was suicidal, that it was self-refuting. And he asked me a question at that point. And he said, do you think, kind of proudly, do you think, do you think I've done a good job thinking through this issue? Now, I was at an awkward spot there because I did not think that he had done a very good job, but he's the one who's had a couple of drinks and was very proud of himself. And so I told him, actually, no, Now, he did this in a friendly way, but I said, no, I didn't think he had thought his views through at all. And then I wanted to explain to him why. And I'll give you that thought coming up a little bit later in the show, in this hour. About right now it's time for a break, and let's do that, and I'll come back to you here on Stand to Reason.
What comes into our mind when we think about God is the most important thing about us. Everyone has ideas about God. Unfortunately, many people hold false ideas about him, and these ideas have consequences. Some false ideas have led people to worship a God of their own making, while others have led people to reject God altogether. This year, we've devoted an entire conference to answering the most common false ideas about God. Is God anti-gay? Is God good? Do Muslims and Christians worship the same God? These are just a few of the topics we'll be addressing. The only way to guard against false ideas is to fill our minds with true ideas. So join me and a number of other speakers at one of this year's Rethink Apologetic Student Conferences. Find out more information about Rethink by going to rethinkapologetics.com. That's rethinkapologetics.com.
Would you like Greg, Alan, or Tim to come speak at a location near you? If so, just send a quick email to darcy@str.org to schedule them today. Our speakers are accomplished and compelling presenters who address, from a biblical standpoint, topics like abortion, homosexuality, and evolution, as well as apologetics, theology, and evangelism. They're available to teach lectures and seminars, preach sermons, and lead workshops at single events or weekend-long conferences. Their aim is to help Christians like you effectively engage the culture around you with knowledge, wisdom, and character. To learn more, just go to str.org and click on the training tab at the top of the page.
All right, I'm back at you here at Stand to Reason. Greg Kokel giving you a piece of my mind today and trying to clear the brush a little bit on this broader challenge that Christians receive about their way being hateful, bigoted, narrow-minded, arrogant, or something, because they think they've got the right answer about things. I have encountered this so frequently, and especially the claim that if Christians think they're right, then they're arrogant. It's so arrogant to think you're right. By the way, when somebody says that, you know they change the subject. They change the subject from your claim to your personality. And in a moment, I'll tell you how I kind of pointed that out in a conversation in just a bit. But I want to try to deal with a couple of issues that come up in these conversations that are not helpful, okay? I call them dead ends. These are common objections meant to stonewall Christians that actually in some ways strike me as so silly. It's amazing that so many people are impressed with these things. I've already hinted at some of them, and I just keep in mind that very intelligent people, it's axiomatic that very intelligent people make very foolish mistakes in thinking when it comes to spiritual things, all right? And these are some examples. I mentioned some of the comments that Stuart had made, and he says, well, have I thought through this well? I said, well, actually, not really, and here's why. So you're going to run into that a lot, bright people making simple mistakes because of the things that we're dealing with, and also because they're socialized to repeat things they've heard that strike them as sensible, reasonable, and well-justified, though they haven't thought through them, I suspect, and so then just repeat them. And so these, I want to address a couple of those dead ends that are common responses that are not helpful, responses to this issue about what is the true religion and Christians thinking they got it right. They pass as legitimate in lots of circles, but I don't think they're going to get far. In fact, when I do talks about this with groups, I just let them know, here, let me help you out here. I want to disabuse you of some of these common responses, and I'm thinking strategically here at my talk, these are things they're going to be thinking against me. I want to try to take those away, head it off at the pass right at the beginning. So here's the first one. You're intolerant or you're arrogant to think that you're right, all right? So I want you to think about this for a moment because I think this is a really strange objection. Let's say that you have a friend that's not feeling well and he goes to the doctor to get an examination. The doctor examines him closely and comes to the conclusion that he's actually quite sick, that he has cancer, he needs an operation quickly, or else this sickness is going to take his life. No, not good news. And your friend, when hearing the news from the doctor, says to the doctor, "You're mean. You're mean. I'm going to go find a different doctor who's not so mean." Now, let me ask you something. What would you think of your friend if he ignored the doctor's advice because he thought the doctor was mean for saying he had a deadly sickness? Well, I'm sure you'd think that your friend was foolish or maybe even stupid. Oh, that's the S word, dumb. It's foolish because the charge of meanness goes to the doctor's character but not to his diagnosis, okay? It misses the point. It changes the subject. Also, even if the doctor is mean, your friend could still be deathly sick. So even if the claim is sound regarding the doctor's character, it doesn't address the diagnosis at all. So it is both dumb and silly, foolish, dangerous, arguably. All right, now I want to change the illustration a little bit. The Christian says to the non-Christian, in so many words, Jesus is the only way of salvation. Now, by the way, he says this because Jesus himself said it many times and in many ways. We have a little red booklet at Stand to Reason that says, Jesus the Only Way, 100 verses. That's the title. Now, it has my name under it as the author, but God wrote most of it because it's almost all Bible verses. I just connect them together with some explanations. 9 lines of argument that Jesus or that the scriptures follow to demonstrate Jesus is the only way. Now, this isn't our idea then. It's Jesus' idea. I call this tactic, what a friend we have in Jesus. In other words, we let Jesus do the fighting for us on these controversial views that he is responsible for. Do I like that Jesus is the only way? No, not especially, but it's not my idea. It's his. I follow him, so I'm going to tell you what he said. You got a beef? Take it up with him. Okay, that's kind of the idea of the tactic. And so when we say Jesus is the only way, and remember, I'm still working with this illustration of the doctor, people say to us, you're mean. You're mean. Of course, that's not exactly what they'd say. They'd say, you're intolerant or you're arrogant. In other words, they use different words to slight your character because you have a conviction about some spiritual thing. Now, when I put it that way, I think some of you can see right away that the character assault and the conviction are two separate categories, and it's possible to be right about your conviction even if you have some character flaw. Now, we don't know that. We can't say you're flawed just because you think you're correct, because everybody thinks they're correct in what they believe. That's why they believe what they believe. If they didn't believe it was correct, they wouldn't believe what they believe. They believe something else and think that was correct. Okay? This is what it means to believe. It is to hold, it is a mental attitude in which you hold that something is true. You may not know it's true, but you believe it is. That's what believing means. And that doesn't just apply to religious belief. It applies to any belief whatsoever. Now, some people might say, well, That's not a belief. That's a fact. Well, you're mixing apples and oranges. Facts are qualities of qualities of propositions. Beliefs are qualities of people. We have beliefs about things that are facts. When we say they're beliefs, we aren't saying they're mere beliefs. We're just saying that they hold them to be so. And what they hold to be so may be a fact, and it may be obvious to everybody, and therefore it's knowledge because it's well justified. But all knowledge starts with belief, okay? And so when somebody says, okay, you're mean, you're intolerant, you're narrow-minded, something's wrong with your character because you believe Jesus is the answer to man's problem, they're missing the point entirely. It's just as foolish as your friend who goes to the doctor and says, when he hears a diagnosis he doesn't like, that the doctor's mean and he's going to go somewhere else. Part of the foolishness is noting that what you think is a flaw in a Christian's character will never bring you any closer to knowing whether or not his analysis is correct. So the intolerant or arrogant charge is just a way of ignoring or dismissing the claim by attacking the Christian. I mean, you might as well be saying to the person who challenges you as a Christian, well, and you're ugly, and your mom dresses you funny. No, I never say that, because first of all, it's bad manners, even if true. Secondly, it misses the point entirely. Can ugly people be right? Sure. Can beautiful people be wrong? Of course. And the same thing is true of intolerant and arrogant people. Could they be right? Yes. Can nice people who are tolerant and not arrogant be wrong? Of course. They have nothing to do with each other. And it doesn't help others to dismiss a view just because they don't like what they hear. All right. Now, here's another dead end. So the first dead end is to call a Christian a name. By the way, this works both directions. If we are doing this to people who disagree with us on the other side, shame on us. It's just as bad and just as foolish and just as dumb when we do it as when they do it. We don't dismiss a point of view by attacking somebody's character, unless the character relates directly to the issue of the accuracy or truthfulness of the point of view, which in these kinds of discussions is almost never the case. Okay, so second dead end. First one, dismissing a view by calling the view holder arrogant or narrow-minded, or rather intolerant. The second dead end is calling them narrow-minded. Now, this is based on a confusion. I understand why people would think that the Christian view is narrow because it excludes lots of people and includes few. Of course, Jesus said this in the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew 5 or 6. He said that the gate is wide that leads to destruction, and many are those who find it, and the gate is narrow that leads to eternal life, and few are those who find it. Okay, so there is a certain sense we acknowledge a narrowness of our view. And by the way, any view that claims to be true is narrow in a particular fashion. That is, it affirms its own truthfulness and affirms every view outside of the boundary of that truth as false. So there's a certain sense in which every truth claim is narrow. It includes itself and excludes others. All right, now some views have more people entering the kingdom they have in mind than others, particularly Christianity, and so that might be considered a little bit wider. But nevertheless, all claims of truth are narrow in a certain important sense. But that's not the biggest problem here. Remember what was charged against the Christian. It wasn't that the Christian's view was narrow. That itself wouldn't be controversial. There are lots of very specific and arguably narrow antidotes to serious problems. When you go to a doctor because you're sick, he's not going to say, hey, I got a bunch of stuff here. You know, which one would you like? Take the pill that tastes best. And I know you don't like needles, so I'm not going to stick any needles in your arm. No, that's not the question. The question is, what is the antidote, the procedure, the medication that is going to deal with the problem? And sometimes the answer to that question is really narrow. And so singular problems often have singular solutions. We know this from life. And so it shouldn't be surprising that it might turn up in spiritual things as well as more mundane things of life, okay? Sometimes there's only one answer to a problem. There's one solution to a problem. Not always, but sometimes there is. It just depends on the nature of the problem, the nature of the challenge itself, all right? So there's no question that the Christian view is narrow in some significant sense, and no apologies for that. But the charge of Christian being narrow-minded is very different. Note, by the way, that this attack, like the first one, is not on the merits of the view, but on the person. Oh, you're narrow-minded. So it falters in the same way there. But there's something else going on here. There is a difference between having a narrow view and being narrow-minded as a person. Like I said, all claims to truth are narrow. Nothing wrong with that. But narrow-mindedness has to do not with the way, not with the view, but the way a person holds his view. So being narrow-minded is not based on what you believe, but how you believe it. Now, Greg Boyd, in his book, Letters from a Skeptic, and I interviewed Greg many years ago when he first wrote this book. I don't agree with Greg Boyd on a bunch of stuff. And as time goes on, I agree less and less. But he has a good point here in his book, Letters from a Skeptic. He writes, if I refuse to consider any perspective, any religious book, any philosophy which disagreed with my own, that would be narrow-minded. But just because I hold to a belief that disagrees with other perspectives or other religious books or other philosophies doesn't itself make me narrow. So there's a difference between holding a narrow view because you think it's true and holding a view in a prejudiced or narrow-minded way because you refuse to consider contrary evidence. Think of the opposite of narrow-minded. What is it? It's broad-minded, or maybe open-minded. Now, open-minded and broad-minded doesn't mean that you believe everything is true. It means you're open to considering alternatives. You don't have the blinders on. You are not dismissing things because they are outside of your own convictions. This is a prejudicial way of holding a view, a closed-minded, prejudicial way. So if you are a skeptic or a non-Christian and you're inclined to dismiss Christianity as being closed-minded, well, or Christians as being closed-minded, there are some closed-minded Christians. And there are a lot of close-minded non-Christians. You're only going to find out if they're close-minded or not by probing to see if they have considered alternate options and have rejected them for good reasons. I will tell you, in my case, that is the case. I have looked at alternate options, and I reject them for, I think, very good reasons. And I will tell you what those reasons are. They're not emotional reasons. They're not prejudicial reasons. They're not just bullheadedness. But I can give you a collection of rationales why I don't adhere to another view. I do not have the blinders on for the most part. I say for the most part because everybody has some blinders. Everybody has a, what do they call that? I can't remember this. It's a bias. It's a Oh, what is that called? A certain kind of bias. Confirmation bias. Thank you, Amy. So everybody's got confirmation bias. We've got to be careful of that. But that's not quite the same as being narrow-minded. I'm looking at what I see, and I'm giving my reasons why I don't think this works. Okay, so simply dismissing Christianity by calling it narrow-minded misses the point, because narrow-minded is not a vice that applies to a view. It's a vice that applies to a person in how they hold the view, if in fact they hold it that way. Okay? So if you're not a Christian, don't let a foolish objection like that get in the way. Now, I want to tell you next why I think that the idea that all religions are equally valid is actually false. Okay? And I'll do that when I come back from break. And I'm Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason. Stay with us.
You can take Stand to Reason with you through our mobile apps, available for free from the App Store or the Google Play Store. The Quick Reference app gives you short, easily accessible courses on our most popular topics like tactics, homosexuality in the Bible, morality, the story of reality, and many more. The Stand to Reason app has all our latest content available at your fingertips. You can listen to our podcasts, check the blog, and access timely and practical resources. They're free, so download the apps today on the App Store or the Google Play Store and start carrying Stand to Reason with you everywhere you go. If you enjoy our apps, you can help other people find them by rating them on the App Store or the Google Play Store.
Are you looking for a way to be more involved in the STR community? When you choose to support Stand to Reason with a monthly gift of $10 or more, you become a strategic partner in the work of equipping Christian ambassadors. Your monthly commitment makes you a part of a special group helping STR-trained Christians to graciously defend classical Christianity and classical Christian values. Your monthly gift helps us plan and manage STR's resources and provides consistent support to aid our planning and ongoing work. As a strategic partner, you'll enjoy an automatic 10% discount in our online store, access to a private Facebook group, and bi-monthly insider updates, so you'll get the inside scoop on what's going on in the ministry, and you'll know what you can pray for. Become a strategic partner in the Stand to Reason community today by visiting str.org/donate. Click How Often Will You Donate and choose Monthly. For personal assistance, you can email ocean@str.org. That's ocean@str.org.
All righty, friends. I have been addressing the broader issue of challenges that are raised to Christianity because Christians say what Jesus said about himself, and that is that he is the only way of salvation. And incidentally, as I mentioned earlier, he said this many times in many ways. I saw a critique once written by a skeptic of some sort going after this notion and looking at John 14, where Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but through me." And he argued that Christians had misunderstood this particular passage, and then he gave an alternate understanding. Okay, fair enough. The problem is that is not the only place such a thing was mentioned. It is from the beginning all the way to the end in everything that Jesus did and built into the entire enterprise of being Messiah. And so even if you could construe in another fashion this particular statement, you can't do it with all the rest. This was foundational to his claim. All right? He is the light of the world. He is the bread of life. He is the living water. I and the Father are one. Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. I have come to do the Father's will. You know, there's all kinds of characterizations. He who believes in me believes in the Father who sent me. He who does not believe in me rejects the Father who sent me. And so when people push back on that, they push back in a number of different ways with different challenges, like that's arrogant, narrow-minded, that's intolerant, that's hateful, that's bigoted, or something like that. And I don't think it's bigotry. I think it's simple math, and I want to explain that next. But I just want to underscore that all of these challenges, almost to a 1 are not challenges against the claim. There's no attempt, hardly, to show that the claim itself must be false, that Jesus is not the only way, but rather some other way is the only way, or some other, like, some people might not identify a religion. It's that anybody who's good will go and be with God. Okay, well, then you believe in only one way, and that one way is goodness, all right? What I want to show next is that the claim is not essentially bigoted, but there's a very important reason why this claim that all religions can't be right is a sound claim. And some of you have heard this story before because I've told it a number of times, but I was invited to do a program in Toronto many years ago on a TV show that might still be circulating around the, you know, the digital world. The show is long gone. But I have a DVD of it somewhere. I haven't watched it in a long time, but somebody just told me they watched it recently. It's called Test of Faith, and this is where they fly in some religious weirdo, and they put him in a hot seat, and there's a semicircle table there. The hot seat's in the inside. There are 3 seats on the outside, actually 4. Valerie Pringle was the host, and then there would be on one side, and then there would be 3 other people that come out during the show, and so it was basically 3 against 1. All these other religious folk versus the weirdo. Now, you know, of course, where Mr. Kokel was sitting. I was the weirdo in the hot seat. And my weird religious idea was that all religions don't lead to God. That that religious pluralism, the strong form of pluralism, not just the view that there are different religions in the world. There is a plurality of religions. Who would deny that? But the strong form is that all of these religions are equally legitimate paths to God because they are equally true. Now, not a lot of details given in that, but I disagreed with that. And so that's why I was on the show. And I had been phoned from Detroit to the office here where I'm at right now, and not Detroit, but Toronto. And I had an interview, and they usually do that for a thing like this because they got to find out whether you're weird enough to be able to fly out and make an appearance on their TV show. And I was, apparently they figured it'd be weird enough. They put me on a plane and out I went. Turned out the guy who interviewed me was named Pierre. And when I got there, I got to meet Pierre. So we were at the studios, and there we are off stage there, and I meet Pierre, and we're talking. It turns out Pierre is an atheist, which is great. So we're making a conversation and having a good time and carrying on and small talk and that. And I said, hey, Pierre, I'm going to make a bet with you, gentleman's wager, about the way things are going to go during this show. I am going to give an argument against pluralism, but others are not going to engage my argument. They're going to rather attack me personally because I'm a Christian and start calling me names. And this is my prediction based on what I told you a few moments ago. Characteristically, people don't go after the issue. They go after the believer. This is a strong, ad hominem kind of informal fallacy. It's bad thinking and it's bad manners, but it happens all the time. I told Pierre, I'm not sure if this is going to happen. We'll see. Okay, so then the cameras roll, and I'm first segment, just me and Valerie. And Valerie asks me, why are you not a religious pluralist? And so my intention at that point was to give an argument that did not trade on my own religious convictions. And what I mean by that is I could have said, well, I'm a Christian, and I think Christianity is right. Jesus got it right. And if Jesus got it right, that means everybody else who disagrees with him got him wrong. Therefore, other religions are false. Christianity is true. Ergo, pluralism is false. All religions are true. Now, that's, I think, a respectable way to argue. Nothing wrong with that. But it would change the nature of the discussion a little bit. It would make Christianity the topic, the issue. I didn't want Christianity to be the target. I wanted pluralism to be the topic. That's what we were there to talk about. So I decided I wasn't going to try to advance Christianity at all. So some of you know I'm not in harvest mode here. I'm not preaching the gospel. I'm not telling what the truth is. I'm trying to disabuse them of a false idea that keeps them from thinking carefully about the truth claims of the gospel. And that is religious pluralism. So I'm gardening here. I want to show them that this is just not a good way to go. This is getting in the way. And so I gave my argument. And my argument was simply this. And this is all the first segment of the show. It's just me and Valerie. And I'm addressing her and the camera, and I'm saying that... And I, by the way, I tell her that this isn't an argument that trades on my own religious views. Anybody could use this. Even an atheist could use it to show that all religions can't be true, even if he is at least open to the possibility that some religion might be true. And I said, Jesus claimed to be the Messiah. Now, he either is the Messiah or he's not the Messiah. That's pretty straightforward. And incidentally, for those of you who are thinking, well, maybe he never claimed it because maybe he never lived, well, then he's not the Messiah. So it's that denial about the historicity of Jesus or the reliability of the gospel still fits into my point. Either he was or he was not, or he is or he is not. If he is not the Messiah, the Christians are wrong. For whatever reason he's not the Messiah, the Christians are wrong, and the Jews are right on that point. If it turns out that Jesus is the Messiah, well, the Christians are right, but that means the Jews are wrong. But under no case could they be both equally correct. Is that clear? It's not hard. If God exists, and maybe that's an open question, he is either a personal God or not. That is, he would be a God who is not personal. Now, if it turns out that God is not personal, then the Hindus are right on that point, and the Jews and the Christians and Muslims are wrong. If it turns out that God is personal, then the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims are right on that point, and the Hindus are wrong, but they can't both be right. Is that clear? Pretty straightforward. When you die, maybe you go to heaven or hell. Maybe you get reincarnated. Maybe you lie in the grave and do nothing but do what corpses do in the grave. But you can't do them all at the same time. Somebody is mistaken. Maybe they're all mistaken. That's certainly possible. We could all be wrong, but we can't all be right. So then we went to break. Now, incidentally, that is a really good argument. It is an argument against religious pluralism based on the idea that religions have contradictory truth claims at their core. Notice we're not talking about how many angels could dance on the head of a pin. We are talking about core concepts like the nature of God, the nature of salvation, and that kind of stuff. The very nature of reality. These are critical. They cannot be right. Okay, so we go to break, and then a Sikh comes out. He's the first person opposite me in the conversation. And a Sikh is a religious order from India. Gentlemen wear the turbans. And when he was asked about my view, what he thought about what I said, he said, well, if Mr. Kokal thinks he won the lottery, then good for him. I'm thinking, huh? How did the lottery get into this conversation? Now, what had happened is that Tishar Singh, that was his name, had gone to the internet and looked up str.org and found some things I'd written, realized that I'm a Christian, we think we're right, and other people are wrong. Not the topic of the evening. Nevertheless, he found that out, and he was now coming back like gangbusters. And he's shaking the paper across the table, and he's all upset. And Valerie has to push him down in his chair. He's that bugged at me because I'm the one who thinks I'm right and I'm the kind of person who causes wars. Remember, I'm just sitting there cool and calm and no difficulty, and he's all going off at me. He's the tolerant one, right? And then there was a Hindu pastor, and then there was a female pastor from the United Church of Canada, pluralist all. And it was interesting what happened. Pretty soon, slipping into the conversation. Words like intolerant, narrow-minded, and arrogant, and all this other stuff. And what are they answering my argument? No, they're fulfilling my prophecy. And I even pointed this out. I said, "We're coming after me now." Okay, well, maybe I am all those things you say that I am. Well, why don't I just agree that I'm a big meanie? I'm the bad guy. And so then we all agree that I'm the bad guy. What can we set this aside and get back to talking about what we came here to talk about? And so, you know, on and on we went. But they didn't get it. I'll tell you who got it. It was the atheist who got it. He understood my point. And he bounded up on the stage after the camera stopped rolling. He was really mad at the Sikh in particular, using language appropriate for an atheist to get mad at him. But what's my point? My point is it's not bigotry to think that one religion is true and other religions are false. It's just simple math, okay? Now, it doesn't mean I'm right. I could be mistaken. Everybody can be mistaken, but everybody can't be right. And that's my starting point in this conversation. And once we get that through our heads, that everybody can't be right, then we might, by looking at some of the reasons that we would believe that maybe one of these views is actually true, or at least more true than the others, and we're on the way to finding out what the world is actually like. And that's my project. So don't be taken in by this stuff. Don't be taken in by people calling you names. Be generous to them, be kind, but point it out. They change the subject. And point out, too, that it's not bigotry to think that one religion is true. It's just simple math. It turns out that 90% of the people in the world are actually wrong about what they believe in religion. That's the math. That's the calculus. Not hate. Not bigotry. Just common sense. Which one is right? That's another issue. We'll go there too sometime. This is meant to solve or address at least one challenge. There you go, friends. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven. Bye-bye now.